Richie Neal is the congressman from Massachusetts 1st, beautiful district. He's a Democrat. He's been in office since 1989. To me, that doesn't sound that long, but it's long. And he is the ranking member of the House Ways and Means Committee, meaning that he is the top Democrat. Richie, always wonderful to hear from my congressman.
Just nice to be with you.
Oh, and it's great to, and it's great that you're here with us. So there's so much to talk about, but you're the Ways and Means guy. So let's start with a tax overhaul plan. And what it's going to mean to those of us in Massachusetts, there's a $10,000 cap on deductibility of SALT, state and local taxes. A lot of people are going to get hurt by that, aren't they?
I think they are, and I think it'll be pronounced in many of the suburbs around Boston, but also in many areas across the state just outside of cities. And I think that when you look back at this flawed process, you come to understand that when you contrast what happened with this tax bill with what happened in 1986, in 1986, there were 450 witnesses who offered testimony. There were 30 public hearings, and the process took place over the course of 2 years, including the fact that Jim Baker and Donald Reagan sat through the markup. In this instance, this tax bill was done without any Democratic support, and it was done in about 30 days with no public hearings and no witnesses. And I think now you're seeing the result. People are just beginning to find out what's in the bill. And I think that through the regular order, we could have done a negotiated tax reform bill, emphasis on the word reform, that the public would have really come to like. And I think in this instance here, the example that I use is that when they, meaning the Republicans, when they suggest, for example, that this is middle-class tax relief, and then they cut the top rate from 39.6 to 37, that's not for the middle class. And I think that when you look at the doubling of the estate tax exemption from $11 million to $22 million, that's not for the middle class. And in addition, when they suggest that this was all going to be done on a postcard, there's no evidence of that. In fact, I've been suggesting that it would take a billboard to explain many of the things that they've done in this tax bill. So I think that they've advertised it as tax reform, and I think that part of it was the argument that they needed to get something done after the collapse of their effort to repeal the health care bill. And they decided to go it alone. So once again, I think it only heightens partisan tensions here, but there is no question that this will add to already more concentrated wealth.
Let me double back here and ask you a question, because many people are asking me this, and nobody is in a better position, Richie Neal, to answer this. We're about to have the 2018 elections, and I'm predicting there's going to be a gigantic wave, Democratic wave, across the United States, and I think you're going to take the House and maybe the Senate. So let me ask you this. If you do, you still got a President Trump sitting there, theoretically, for another 3 years. Is there anything you can do to modify all of this?
Oh, I think that that puts us in the driver's seat in terms of negotiation. I think one of the problems with the administration is that they're not knee-deep in policy. And I think if they had the chance, some of the people around the president, to hear what real solid negotiating tools would look like, I think that that might bring us to a more accommodating place. But it's also a certainty when you consider that the House would, I think in that instance there, begin to force the administration to negotiate. And I think that's the most important consideration.
Sure. If you want something, then you better make this change or that change in the tax bill.
That's exactly right. And right now, you know, what we saw with the tax bill was the use of what is known as reconciliation. And reconciliation ensured that it could be done with only one political party. And they did that with 52 votes in the United States Senate. And it was also done to rush the idea that before the new senator from Alabama could be seated, that this tax bill would have been accomplished.
So let's talk a little bit about that reconciliation. It's only because so many people don't understand it, and it's because you're such a wonderful teacher. I know you teach college and all the rest. Just explain what that is as opposed to needing the 60 votes.
Well, reconciliation is a process that actually comes from the Budget Act, I believe, of 1976. And in that determination, it was suggested that at least midway through a fiscal year, there would be an opportunity to reconcile revenue with expenditure, simply meaning you would get an idea of where revenues were, and that's an important consideration when you look at gross domestic product, revenue as a percent of gross domestic product. And in this instance here, it was a simple tool, and then it became, as many other items in the congressional forecast, it became more complicated because it essentially became a tool whereby once a year, one party or the other could use it for the purpose of passing pretty, I think, partisan legislation. And you could do that with 52 votes rather than 60 votes. And recall, in the Senate, one of the things that has made every senator a player for a long period of time is the fact that it's very, very hard to get the 60 votes on anything. So you need some input from the minority party, because if you recall, even with the Affordable Care Act, sure, we had about a two-year window in which we had 60 votes in the U.S. Senate, and that's one of the reasons we were able to pass the Affordable Care Act. And the difficulty is that it really is in your face. And you would prefer that there be another tool that would accommodate the interests of the minority. But in the Senate, unlike the House, there is an effort to accommodate every member of the U.S. Senate. In the House, it's much more partisan, much more determined by rules that constrain the number of amendments, the amount of time allocated for debate. And there really is no effort in the House by the majority party to take into consideration the views of the minority. And once the piece of legislation in the House goes to what is known as the Rules Committee, then its outcome is pretty much preordained, because that's where you establish time limits, that's where you establish amendments, and that's where you establish any opportunity for bipartisanship, which, as you know, increasingly has been of less and less import.
And ironically, Richie Neal, here is the People's House, the, quote, lower house, closer to the people, but it's much more of an oligarchy than the United States Senate is.
And I've seen this during my time here, how that has changed. It was not meant to be that way. The idea of the two-year term was that it would make the House, in a sense, much more amenable to public opinion, much more emotional, much more emotive in their proposals. And on the Senate side, if the founders understood that with a six-year term, there would be a check on popular will. So the House responds to popular will, and the Senate, oftentimes, because of the rotating or the variations of who comes up one-third of the Senate every 2 years, there's less in the Senate, less energy, less enthusiasm, and in many cases, I think, less desire to accomplish work based on emotion. So the framers wisely thought one House would speed it up with a two-year term, and one chamber would slow it down with a six-year term. And that's one of the problems that the House and the Senate have. And that's why there is considerable difference of opinion in the House and the Senate has frequently how to proceed.
And we only have a minute, but it has really turned the House into an oligarchy in that the guy at the top, in this case Speaker Ryan, is calling all the shots.
Well, there's no question. The Speaker of the House determines who sits on the Rules Committee. And the Rules Committee, there is no effort, again, meant to reconcile differences with the minority party. In fact, the breakdown or the proportion of members in the House on the Rules Committee is 9-4. So that's better than 2-1. And as you know, in the House, that the breakdown in the House is somewhere around 53-47 or so. But that is not true in the House. And all members of the Rules Committee in the House are appointed by the Speaker. It's really the Speaker's committee.
Sure. That ain't right. It's always great
I would prefer that we go back to the times when Lyndon Johnson and Jack Kennedy both broke the will of the chairman of the Rules Committee, even though it was a member of their own party, on civil rights issues.
A guy named Judge Smith, who used to go apple picking when he didn't want to rule in the administration's favor. I remember it very well. Hey, Richie,
that was Lyndon Johnson who put him out of business.
Richie Neal, you are the best. Richie Neal is the congressman, my congressman, from Massachusetts 1st District. And Richie, when we come back the next time, let's talk a little bit about fire and fury.
For sure.